Hey, well, welcome everyone. Good morning, Fields Church. My name is Travis, and I'm the lead pastor here in Charleston. Welcome. We're so glad. Again, we are one church, two locations. So I know you guys are in Charleston being a part of this, but we are so excited that we are one church together. And we've heard so many great things and stories coming out of Charleston. And guess what, guys? We are 4 weeks away from Easter, where all the seats around us, Charleston and Mattoon, these seats will be packed. And we're excited about that. Let me just take a moment before we get into teaching today to talk a little bit about Easter. We're only 4 weeks away, and so it is the greatest opportunity to invite friends and family. In fact, stats say like 80, 90% of people that you invite will actually attend, and so that means that we can invite people. So Easter is an amazing, it's a big deal. And at the Fields Church, we make it a big deal because, well, it is a big deal. Like Jesus rescues us from sin because the Easter story is the power of the resurrection. And we'll talk all about that. But I want you guys to know it will be an opportunity for you to bring friends and family back to church so they can have relationship with God and hear it in a very relevant way. It's going to be a great service. What I want you guys to know is services are in both locations in Charleston and Mattoon. We're going to pack out Charleston with one big service. Mattoon's going to have different services on Saturday and Sunday, but Charleston's going to have their regular service on Sunday, and it's going to be big and awesome. And then the other thing I want you to know is that you are going to feel, listen, you're going to feel like you actually made a huge difference in someone's life because when you invite them and God does something good in their life, and we've seen it year after year after year, when people invite their friends and family to church, God does something, and you're going to feel such this sense of reward that you got to play a part in that. And so you're going to want to be a part of inviting. So what can you do about that? At the end of service today, on your way out, you're going to get an invite card. And you're going to get several cards where you can go and begin conversations, begin planting the seed of, hey, do you have any plans for Easter? And then in the meantime, you're going to start seeing things online and stuff. But this today, take your cards and begin to pray and ask God, who am I going to invite? And then you start looking for those opportunities to create conversation at work, with a relative, with that neighbor that you're friends with, someone that you know that needs to be in church at Easter, whether it's in Charleston or in Mattoon. It's going to be awesome. So please, please, please pray about that because it's one of those opportunities. We only have a couple opportunities a year where it's just like a massive green light to go and invite and people will come. So we are 4 weeks away from Easter. So make sure to grab your invite cards on the way out today and begin to create conversations and invite people. So we're going to talk about more of that in the next couple weeks. But right now, we want to talk about our series we're in, Won't You Be My Neighbor? We've been walking through this the last few weeks. If you're new with us today, you can always go online and watch the previous weeks. But we kind of tied in with Mr. Rogers and been talking about being a good neighbor. A year ago, we really dove in and said, we know that God wants to identify us, and our mission is to be a good neighbor and that good Samaritan to anyone that God puts in our path. That could be here at home in the church, that could be in the community, that could be around the world. And we take that assignment serious, to be a good neighbor to the people around us and the people God's placed in our lives. We've taken it so seriously, even say financially, in 2018 and 19, let's just create the theme called For Our Neighbors. So any dime, any dollar, everything you invest through the Fields Church is going to help your neighbors, for our neighbors. And so that's why you see the terminology a lot of For Our Neighbors, is because everything we're doing in 2018-19, that's that overall theme of being for our neighbors. And so this series is really talking about how to be a good neighbor. We talked about how to serve a few weeks ago. We talked about the importance of the big invitation to that heavenly party. Last week we took a step back and said we have to make sure we don't covet our neighbor's possessions and think more about the people in our life and not the possessions around us. So you can go back and watch that. Today, I want to talk about being a good neighbor and how we need to realize when we kind of look around us, whether home or community around the world, that we have some neighbors that are lonely. And so today's topic is is a little, like, it might actually step on toes or it might hurt the heart a little bit because it's a real subject. It's a subject that we all deal with. It's a subject that's, let's just be honest, like, we know people who have dealt with loneliness or just feeling alone. I just remember, you know, and I know there's different degrees of loneliness. So I remember when, let me give you a story that I'm not sure anybody's really heard the real story. The story behind the story of Joy and I getting married and me deciding to ask Joy she want to be my wife. And so, you know, we dated through high school. So Joy and I dated. We grew up in this area and we dated through high school or junior year or senior year. And then I went to EIU and I'm in Charleston. I'm a journalism major and I dive deep into being at the Daily Eastern News and very involved. And I ended up being the editor-in-chief of the Daily Eastern News on campus. In my junior, senior year, I was in upper-level leadership and I was extremely busy. Enjoy. I love her. She would come in at night, and because it was a newspaper, I am there all the time, late at night, kind of getting to make sure that all the stories are ready. She would come in and just kind of be by my side. Like, I'd be at the computer and be editing stories, and just, and there she is right next to me, just like faithfully next to me, spending time with me. And I was kind of like the dumb boyfriend that did not give her the attention that she absolutely deserved. And I know that we're getting ready to, like, hey, 1 year left of college. We've been dating for 5-6 years. And you know, ladies, in her mind is graduation's coming. We're done with college. She's thinking and deciding, when are we going to get married and what is life going to look like and all these things. And I know she's sitting next to me going, I wonder what life is going to be like. The whole time what I'm thinking in college is my big decisions and my big thought is, am I going to order pizza tonight? Or am I going to, like, drive to McDonald's on my way home? Because that was where the decisions I was making. And she's trying to decide, is it ready to get married or not? And so totally off my radar. Fast forward a little bit. I had a summer internship between junior and senior year. And I got hired to do an internship in Springfield, Missouri. So it's 6 hours away at a Christian publishing house. And I'm there and I go for my interview, like for my final interview. And I don't know anyone. So I'm going to a town that's 6 hours away. I don't have anywhere. I'm going to date myself. No social media, no Facebook. I'm not even sure I had a cell phone during this time. And I find myself at night in the hotel all by myself. And it got my interview in the morning, and I'm sitting there just watching TV, and to be honest, I just have this sense of, I'm alone, and I hate being alone. Like, I like people. And then all of a sudden, I thought, I don't want to be alone. And then I'm going to tell you what happened. It sounds kind of shallow. Little light bulb clicked on. It's like, I got to marry Joy. Like, I just got to get married. I cannot be alone. And I know some of you guys are going, that's the worst. Like, that is so shallow that you didn't have the truth is, I didn't have that. The first time I stared in your eyes, Joy, I just knew you were my wife. And that's just not our story. But this is my story, is when I couldn't stare in her eyes and I was 6 hours away, I realized I miss her and I don't want to be alone. And then all of a sudden I started thinking, I'm ready to figure this out. I got to decide how I'm going to ask her to marry me. I got to decide when's the best time to get married. I got to decide how in the world is a guy like me going to buy a ring, you know, that's not out of a Cracker Jack box. You know, it's like, I got to decide all this stuff. But it was really out of, I just don't want to be alone. And I don't want to deal with loneliness. And I think there's a lot of us in the room at different levels of, you know, loneliness or really lonely because of life circumstances. And I realized that in the framework of today of won't you be my neighbor, the framework of the conversation of loneliness, I realize there's people here and in the room today that you're being really honest. You're like, I'm lonely now. And I've been praying this whole week that you guys would be encouraged by God and you would know that God loves you and this church, our church loves you and we're so glad you're here. But today, just to continuing this theme of won't you be my neighbor, I want us to kind of flip it and look at it a different way and say, not are we lonely, but are there some lonely people around us? Now, there might be some people around you today, like where you're sitting, but there might be some lonely people that are on the other side of the fence or the alley or just right across the road from you. And then you and I know that there's lonely people all over the world. And so let's take a look and let's ask ourselves, is what's that look like to be a good neighbor? Because I think being a good neighbor is being thoughtful of the lonely neighbor. And we need to be thoughtful for the people that live around us that God has placed in our lives. And we need to be thoughtful for those who might need more relational connections in their life. And I think that's what being a good neighbor is making sure that we take some ownership in helping eliminate loneliness out of people's lives. Like, what if God has placed you in the circle of people that you're in because you're supposed to help eliminate loneliness out of someone else's life? You know, what would it look like if we took that upon ourselves? Being a good neighbor is being very thoughtful of that loneliness. And I know that, you know, loneliness can be the neighbor that lives next door and the man or the woman that lives by themselves, and we can almost quickly identify that person as lonely, but it's not always that scenario. I mean, there's a quote that says, it was from a former president that said, "There's nothing more lonely than the presidency," meaning I feel all alone, I'm all by myself in this. You know, and I can even understand that as a pastor at times, as someone's like, not everyone understands the shoes that, you know, the path I walk in day to day in pastoring. And so there's some loneliness in different jobs and in different careers. And so maybe you have a coworker that's lonely. Maybe you have a neighbor that's lonely. You might have a friend that is lonely. Even though you guys chat, you know that deep down there's something in their heart that there's a loneliness. The psalm writer, the book of Psalms is this book that is poetry. It's a poem. It's songs. And King David wrote the majority of them, and then other prophets has written some of the other chapters in this. And I want us to take a little section of chapter 102. It's a big book, 102 chapters plus more, but. We don't really know, as you know, theologians and scholars, is this David or is this another author? But it doesn't really matter who wrote it. You're going to feel what the writer is saying. Let's take a look at it. It says, "Lord, hear my prayer." Like, who hasn't said that before? God, are you listening? "Lord, hear my prayer. Listen to my plea. Don't turn away from me in my time of distress, heartache. Bend down and listen. Would you just listen to me and answer me quickly when I call to you? For my days disappear like smoke and my bones burn like red hot coals. And my heart is sick. It's withered like grass and I have lost my appetite. And because of my groaning, I am reduced to skin and bones." And then he says this. "I'm like an owl in the desert, like an owl in the wilderness, in the far off wilderness. I lie awake lonely as a solitary bird on a roof." Another translation says, "like a lone sparrow up on the roof." And you can see that this person is saying, "I'm all by myself here." Like, there could have been people in this person's life, but he's just saying, "I feel like a bird out on the wire, up on the barn that's all by themselves." He says, "Hear my prayer, God. Will you just listen? My heart hurts. I'm feeling like I'm in distress." And that is the echo of loneliness that you may have people in your life that's what they're saying. They may have not been able to verbalize it that way, but they're saying, "My heart hurts. I just wish someone would listen to me. I wish someone would give me some attention, some pay attention, just know that I exist. I just feel like I'm out here all by myself." And there's a lot of people in our lives that think that way. They talk that way. And it's not just the neighbor maybe that's obvious. And it's not just the presidency that says, "Oh, it's lonely here." There's a, Janis Joplin said this in the 70s, "I get off that stage after a concert and I go and I sit and watch TV and I just feel so lonely." Janis Joplin, this like 1970s singer that was just a rock star, saying, "It's just so lonely." Another author wrote that a city is a place where hundreds of people come and gather and they're lonely together. How about that? Just because you're together in a room, there's people, there's individuals across congregations today on a Sunday that are lonely even though they're in a room full of people. That's what happens is something happens on the inside and we get to be lonely. And if you want to be a good neighbor, listen, this is where we're at. If you want to be a good neighbor, you can identify who's lonely and then take some ownership to help eliminate some of that loneliness. That's what a good neighbor does. A good neighbor identifies the loneliness and says, I want to help eliminate that. I think if we're going to do that, if we're going to get involved in conversations with people and say, I'm going to help them that are lonely, I think we need to understand why. Like, why are they lonely? What are the reasons people deal with loneliness? So I'm going to give you a couple different reasons. Number one is rejection. Rejection they've been rejected in life. Whether it is a relationship or work or school or their parents growing up. People have tried to have friends, but then they get rejected by that little social circle. Or, you know, they grew up in a home where they really feel like mom or dad has rejected them. And the next thing you know, they're trying to kind of pour out their emotions and friendship and all this stuff, and they feel ignored. And they don't feel like they belong. And now they have this deep inner wound. And it's out of being rejected, and their relationships are very unhealthy, and they don't really want to expose themselves to people and say, you know, like, I'll be a friend. I'm going to share some of my, you know, deepest hurts. They don't do that anymore because they've been hurt and they've been rejected. Mark Twain says this. It's kind of he's so good at just like wrapping up these thoughts of humanity. And Mark Twain says this. He goes, if a cat sits on a hot stove, that cat won't sit on a hot stove again. That cat won't sit on a cold stove either. That cat just don't like stoves. And it's like, that's the way it is like, burn me once. I'm not getting on any kind of stove because I don't want to be burnt again. And relationships are like that. We have people in our lives that have been burnt by a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a parent, a boss, a neighbor, a friend. And it's like that, sitting on a hot stove and like, I ain't doing that again. I am not putting myself in that position again to be hurt because the rejection, it was so powerfully hurtful that they said, I'm not putting myself in that position again. So there's some people in our life that have dealt with rejection. Another reason that's pretty common is insecurity, that they feel very insecure on the inside. They have very little sense of self-worth. For whatever reason, their upbringing, things that have said to them, their past, they just don't feel very worthy. They don't feel very important. They don't feel like anyone gives them any credit for anything. And what happens is they begin to shrink back and they just don't think anyone will accept them because they don't feel very worthy of being accepted or liked. And so what happens is they begin to build walls around their lives and they begin to just pull back and protect themselves from being hurt. And so they have these walls in their life. Like, do you know anybody that has walls in their life? And they just like, you can't get to them. They're protecting themselves. And they're protecting themselves because they don't want you to get close to them because of something else that has happened. And so insecurity. The third one then is something that's pretty, you know, very common, and that's the sorrow and tragedy and loss. And this is the one that hurts a lot. You know, this is where we've lost someone. We've had to live through some tragic experience. That we've gone through something that's created such grieving and sorrow and loss. And because of that, what happens, and this is no fault of anyone. Like, they had to experience something that they didn't bring upon themselves. Yet because they've experienced your friend, your neighbor, your coworker, maybe you today, because you've experienced this deep hurt and this loss and this tragic situation, then what happens is we slowly begin to lose perspective on life. And then we don't feel like anybody cares. We don't think anyone's there for us. We don't know if anybody understands where we're coming from. Things just don't even really make sense anymore. The loss and the tragedy has impacted them so much that their perspective on life now has skewed, and they're seeing things differently, and it's kind of unhealthy. In the Old Testament, one of the oldest stories of a human is Job. Job is one of the oldest stories of like following somebody's life that was written and recorded. And Job was known as a very upright man of God. He was prosperous, business, wealth, things, big family. And then he experienced just horrendous disasters. And you can read this in the entire book of Job. But one at a time, things started getting taken away from him. And he started losing these important things in life. And the next thing you know, the things that he was holding on dear, like his own offspring, or his health, or his property. And all of this was just taken away from him. And the next thing you know, he's searching for answers, and he's trying to figure out why is everything turned upside down. And his perspective on life was completely messed up. And if you read the 19th chapter of Job, you get a little bit of an insight in, wow, this the hurt and the pain of loss and the pain of tragedy has really affected how he's processing life. In fact, let's take a look at it. It's just like, It's peeking into his mind, and he says, my relatives stay far away, and my friends have turned against me, and my family is gone, and my close friends have forgotten me, and my servants and maids consider me a stranger, and I'm like a foreigner to them. And when I call my servant, he doesn't even come, and I have pled with him, and my breath is repulsive to my wife, and I'm rejected by my own family, and even young children despise me. And when I stand to speak, they turn their backs on me, and my close friends detest me, and my dog doesn't even like me. He doesn't say that, but that's what he's kind of saying. It's like nothing is going right. Those I loved have turned against me. And now, is that really happening in his life? It's really what he's believing, and it's his real feelings. Whether those things are accurate or not of every single individual, you and I know people who are hurt begin to hurt others, and people who are hurting, they don't process relationships as healthy, and next thing you know, they just assume everyone's against them, and everyone just doesn't think that they matter anymore. And here's Job, who came to this conclusion that there's not an individual on earth, not even my wife, that understands or cares. And it's because he experienced such sorrow and tragedy and loss. And he'd gone through a lot, and he really got to the place where things weren't making sense. So we have neighbors. That's their life. Things aren't making sense to them. Their perspective has changed. Let me say it this way. Let's take a look at this. Loneliness makes you feel cut off, unnoticed, unloved, uncared for, unneeded, and maybe even unnecessary. And we didn't know that's what it's feeling like for people in our lives. I want you to know, just doing some research on this, looking at Bible theologians, Christian counselors, looking at psychologists' writings on humanity, they've said that the human being, there's three things that we need in life. Number one is we need someone to love. Like, we need to be able to love somebody else. Like, we have been designed to love others. We need that person in our life to love. The second thing is we need someone that understands. I need someone who gives me some attention and sits next to me and just says, I need to hear about your day. I need to know what you're going through. We need someone who understands. And the third thing they said is someone who needs them. We need to feel needed. Like, you need to wake up and go, I feel like I have purpose. I mean, let's just think about this. Someone to love, someone that understands, and someone who needs us. And that is what's happening on the inside of people struggling in loneliness, is they're missing one of these. They're missing one of these. And I just have to believe that as Christians, if you and I are following Jesus, we're believers in who Jesus is and how he's created us and who we are to become, I honestly can stand here today and talk to you guys and say, I absolutely believe that we as believers are the solution for the lonely neighbor. I believe that. I believe we are it. I believe the church is it. The local church is the hope of the world and the one who can eliminate the loneliness from a neighbor. When the church was being formed, we get a picture of what the church, the early church, looked like. And Luke writes about this in the book of Acts. He actually says, and this is what it was looking like. He's writing it down. He's helping us have this picture of this is what church life was like. And if in Acts chapter 2, you can take a look at this, and it says, all the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and to the sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper and in prayer. So this is a picture of church life. They were listening to the apostles' teachings. They were getting involved in fellowship. They were connecting and meeting, and they were there for one another. They're sharing stories. They're someone's understanding their world. And then all of a sudden they're beginning to share meals, and they're laughing and they're eating, and there's this generosity of come over for dinner, and they even have the Lord's Supper together, and like, let's remember Jesus and let's just remember why we exist. And they were praying together, and that's the picture of the local church. That was the picture of church life back then. And then if you dive a little bit deeper, Luke continues to write a little bit better, deeper description of the church life of that day. And he says this, he says, a deep sense of awe came over all of these believers. And the apostles, they performed many miraculous signs and wonders. And so God was moving, and signs, wonders, healings, all this amazing stuff taking place. And it says, and all of the believers, they met together in one place, and they shared everything that they had. So they're meeting together, they're connecting, they're sharing things. They sold their property and their possessions, and they shared the money with those in need. So they're looking out for people in need. They worshiped together. So they made sure that, man, their spiritual life, we're together in this, growing closer to God in this. They did that in the temple. They met in homes for the Lord's Supper. And then they shared their meals with great joy and generosity. They, you know, and back in that day, they weren't like just going to the grocery store. They're like, hey, it's time to take the goat in the backyard. And now the goat is on the table, and we're going to invite the neighbors in. We're going to invite people over, and we're going to have a meal together. We're going to share in this meal, because if we have leftover meat, I don't get to put it in the freezer. They don't have a refrigerator and a freezer. So they're like, let's just bring the neighbors in and let's have this meal together. And they began to do that. They were sharing their meals with great joy and generosity, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And then listen to this. Look at this. And each day, the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. And more people just started going, I like that. I need that. I want that. What were they doing? They were loving one another. They were understanding one another in community, connecting, talking, building relationships, building bridges. And they needed one another. Like they needed one another. Like this person provided the meal, or this person was caring for one another. They were sharing things. And the crazy thing that was happening during the midst of all this, they were reaching out to others who didn't have it. The lonely neighbor, the person who didn't have what they had, it was overflowing into other people's lives. How do we know that? Because Luke wrote, and people were being added daily to this church life. What's that mean? The giving, the sharing meals, the loving one another, the meeting together, the building relationships, all of that was overflowing into other people's lives. And those people were saying, I want this. I want this. Joy and I have, we had just this wonderful neighbor, and her name was Sue. Now, her son used to attend church here, and his name's John Rakestraw. Some of us in the room know him, and he's gone to a different community to help plant and pastor and be a part of a church that his family was building up. And so we know the family, and some of us in the room do, but I'm going to tell you, Sue is our neighbor, like literally lived right across the street from me and Joy. And Sue had never really attended church. And we loved Sue. And I know God placed Sue right next to us for a reason. And Joy, my wife Joy, she just took a heart for Sue. And she was, you know, an older lady. And so she'd go and check on Sue. And she'd take Sue Diet Coke from the drive-thru or a little bit of dinner, whatever we had left over dinner. We'd put a plate together and just take it over to Sue. And we began to have group at our house. We did one of our groups here at the Fields, and we hosted it at our house. And we invited Sue over to our group. And we said, Sue, you know, your son's John's church, like we're all meeting together. You know, why don't you come over? We just have dinner and just talk a little bit. And it would be so good. And you know what? Sue began to come over to the house. She actually came. And she got plugged into that group. And in our church, like you guys, some of you guys in the room today, you loved Sue and you had such great conversations with her and you brought her in. And Jesus did an amazing work in Sue's life over these weeks and months of not just going to group, but then all of a sudden Sue started coming to church and great things happened. And, you know, unfortunately, Sue fell. And she ended up being paralyzed, and she had this, it ended up being this life-ending injury. And I asked John, her son, I want to share your mom's story Sunday. Is that okay? And he actually shot me a message back. I just want to actually read it to you guys today. He goes, you know, my mom enjoyed having you and your family as neighbors. In addition to just reaching out to her, all of you connected with mom in so many different ways. I can't stress that enough. Joy would bring her Diet Cokes and check on her. You would check on her as well, and she liked your sense of humor, even though you were a Cubs and a Bears fan. She also loved your sons who came over with a plate of food or a plate of cookies and helping them with fundraisers. And I remember how much she loved helping one of your boys raise money for a missions trip. I was able to see all of this from a distance and how it had a positive influence on her life. I say this because my mom was a very guarded and protective person, and she had been hurt by people and even Christian people from her past. I could go on and on, but you get the idea. We can find this is what he said. He didn't even know what I was writing, talking about today. He says, we can find lonely people everywhere. Hopefully we're able to connect with them in a positive way. Thanks. You know, when Sue was in a hospital bed at a different location and couldn't move neck down, one of the things that she would always ask is like, how's my dog? How's my dog doing? And we were taking care of the dog across the street now instead of just checking on Sue. And you know what Joy did? Joy would go over to the house. She would take her phone. She would call John on FaceTime. John would hold the phone up to his mom. And Joy would get that dog up on her lap and just FaceTime dog to Sue. Why? Because we just wanted to be a good neighbor. Joy wanted to be a really good neighbor. I really miss Sue. But the reminder is this. You don't have to have a theological degree to go over to the next door neighbor's house and take him a Diet Coke, check in on him, FaceTime, pet their dog. You just got to be a good neighbor. And I just think that we as followers of Jesus, the church, the gathering of believers, God wants to use us to eliminate loneliness out of someone's life. Can we be good neighbors? Think about what the needs of humanity are. Someone will love them. That's what Sundays are all about here, that they can know God and know that God loves them. And if you're here today, I want you to know that God loves you. This church loves you. Someone wants to know that they're loved. Someone wants to know that someone else is listening. That's why we do groups. They can find freedom by kind of hashing out life and letting it be known that there's a group of people that actually listen. And the other thing that psychologists say is that they want to feel needed. And that's why we can serve. And that's why we want everyone to discover their purpose and go to Growth Track and find that perfect place to serve, is because we realize we want to make it available that anybody and everybody can find that place to serve, because everyone needs to feel needed. And today, if you're here today, it's and you're feeling like, man, I've got an emptiness in my life. I mean, I care about my neighbor, but I feel like something's going on in my heart right now. And I would just say, you know, that's probably because you need to know God, and maybe God's missing. So I'm going to pray for you, and we're going to pray, and Pastor Tim's going to pray for you guys, and we're going to pray that everyone in the room, that we can know God, and then we can be some great neighbors who will go eliminate loneliness out of somebody else's life. Let's pray.